Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is God's Gumshoe, and we're here today to put an end to the end times. Stay with us. You're going to enjoy this program.
Get up that great big healer of hope.
forward destination.
There is no doubt whatsoever that this is a fateful moment in history. Wherever we look, politically, religiously, economically, environmentally, there is insecurity and instability. It's not too much to say that the future of the West and the unique form of freedom it has pioneered for the past four centuries is altogether at risk. There's a great deal of cultural ammunition in the marketplace of ideas, which reports that this civilization, confusion, and turmoil is all related somehow to the end times, an Armageddon or an apocalypse. Current literature and many films and movies have promoted these ideas ad nauseum. The Urantia book does not support these ideas, and to demonstrate this, I would like to share with you a parable that is based upon actual events. In your mind's eye, imagine this if you would. Let us go back in time, back to 430 AD, Carthage, North Africa. Hot, dry, dusty, Mediterranean, and Roman. A young man stands on the shore of the Mediterranean Sea, looking out towards the horizon. He is a Roman. This is a Roman world. He was born into a Roman world, played in a Roman world, was educated in a Roman world. He anticipated being married in a Roman world, bringing children into a Roman world, educating them in a Roman world, and, in all probability, die in a Roman world, with a Roman burial. Above all, he was a Roman. But rumors abound. Rome has fallen, sacked, burned to the ground by the barbarians. As the young man stands by the sea, he sees the ships. The ships of doom and destruction sailing in his direction, coming to lay waste his land, his home, his family. In his fear and panic, he turns and starts to run. He runs for 2 days, resting only when he can no longer carry on, running through the North African solitude to the city of Hippo, the home of his teacher, the master teacher Augustine. As he nears the city, he sees the smoke and the flames, and he knows that he is too late. He begins searching for his teacher through the throngs of the people leaving the burning city, and upon finding him, he falls on his knees at the master's feet, crying, wailing, and with tears streaming off his chin, he cries out to the old philosopher, "Master, Master, is this the end of the world? Is this the Armageddon you told us about? Will this be the end of us and our world?" The master, singed and stinging from his own wounds, picks up the boy, and looking him straight in the eye, says to him, "Fear not, my son. You do not have anything to be afraid of." Then, with a knowing in his eyes, he spoke to the very soul of the lad, saying, "My boy, my boy, this is not the end of the world. Worlds do not end. Human systems change. You have nothing to fear, because walking in the streets of the cities of man are the builders of the cities of God." Today, we too stand on the shores of the sea of humanity, looking outward towards our horizon. and we too see the ships of doom and destruction coming to lay waste our civilization. The ships of medical pandemic, the ships of economic collapse, the ships of greed and selfishness, the ships of religious and civil warfare, and of terrorism. And many too cry out, "Is this the end of the world? Is this the Armageddon our prophets of today speak of? Is this the end of our civilization as we know it?" And in response, I reiterate the words of the Master Teacher Augustine, "Worlds do not end. Human systems change. And you have nothing to fear, because walking in the streets of the cities of man are you, the builders of the cities of God. You are the one. You are the one that we have been waiting for. This is not the end of something. This is the beginning of something. Something bigger than anything we have ever imagined in the history of the human race. Certainly, we are facing our greatest challenge. The blizzard of the world has crossed the threshold, and it has overturned the order of the soul. But the 196 papers of the Urantia Book make it forever certain that materialistic determinators are not the exclusive law of the cosmos. Materialism is there, but it is not exclusive. Mechanism is there, but it is not unqualified. Determinism is there, but it is not alone, because we are not alone. There is a spirit within you that is the reality of your own personal experience. In paper 102, your Urantia Book says, "Man very early becomes conscious that he is not alone in the world or the universe. There develops a natural, spontaneous self-consciousness of other-mindedness in the environment of selfhood." We have seen this in all the wisdom traditions of our ancestors. Faith translates this natural experience into the spiritual recognition of God, as you understand it. But God is the reality, the source, nature, and destiny of other-mindedness. But such a knowledge of God is ever and always a reality of personal experience, not dogmas and doctrines. If God were not a personality, he could not become a living part of the real spiritual experience of a human personality. We are facing our greatest opportunity, the opportunity to build a new civilization and to know that we are not alone, that we have help, cosmic help, and this should imbibe us with a sense of destiny and enthusiasm never before seen on our planet. The work is ours. The consequence is God's. The cities are ours. The result will be the Supremes, one step closer to the age of light and life. It is our only course of action. The old is breaking down, but the new is breaking through. Today, our task is to integrate these great cosmic intuitions of our cosmic mind into a unified philosophy, a worldview that will strengthen the fabric of goodwill in the world. To bring in the new day of our human well-being is our spiritual birthright. We need a deeper sense of reality based and including spiritual values, and a new perception of humanity as a unit of divine life within an ordered and purposive universe. Humanity is not a haphazard or uncharted course. There is a plan. This plan has always existed and is part of the greater design of the cosmos. The plan has worked out through the evolutionary developments of the past, and because of the special impetus given it from time to time by the great leaders, teachers, and people of goodwill to human race, it has moved us forward and moved us forward and moved us forward. But it is not magic. The real magic is taking the first consciously reflective animals to emerge on the planet, split them into 7 or 8 races of humanity, and then get them to create ways to live together. First in society, then in tribes, then nations, and now to a whole and complete planetary civilization. This is the real magic of the universe. To turn animals into supermen.
Come out of sadness from wherever you've been. Come brokenhearted, let rescue begin. Come find your mercy, oh sinner, come kneel. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can't heal.
Lay down your shame. How do I?
Good morning. This is God's Gumshoe. Everyone just calls me Gigi. Is this microphone working? I can't tell. I just kind of snuck into the studio here, and I've got a number of microphones, and I'm not sure which one is working. If somebody could please just tell me on the chat board if they can hear me, that would be great. In the meantime, welcome to the Cosmic Citizen, summertime version. I'm here as a summer relief for a couple of weeks for Paula and Chrislyn. And we're just going to have some fun talking about the Urantia Book for Dummies. There we go. All right. I think we're starting to work here. So let me begin with this. So I found this little quote that I thought I should introduce some of this with. Henry David Thoreau once said at the opening of an address at the Concord Town Hall meeting these words. He said, "I trust that you will pardon me for being here. I do not wish to force my thoughts upon you, but I feel forced to be here myself from deep within my soul and to tell you my story that it might assist others in finding the light that will lead us from darkness into the light of a new civilization and a better society." And I feel a bit that way myself. I'm here to discuss the Urantia Book for Dummies, which is a project that we're experimenting with to reach out and try some new things to see if they will work, if they will be of interest to others who may be on the path and looking for some truth and looking for some ways in which to explain some of the challenges that we face on our planet today. So we put together a few sample programs that are up under the, as videos actually, on YouTube, under the title of the Urantia Book for Dummies. And we're just beginning to get it rolling. We've got two chapters up. And we have broken the long videos that we call chapter one and chapter two, that are about 45 minutes or something, into smaller clips called cosmic briefings. And we've got about a dozen of those up. You'll find those on the God's Gumshoe YouTube channel. And I think there's an address on the blurb up above on the Cosmic Citizen page there. So one of the things that would really help me out is I'm the only host, and I would love to hear your questions. We have a call-in number that you can give us a call in. It is area code 646-716-8158. And if you call in and just then and want to ask a question, just hit 1. And on the board here, it puts your hand up, and I can see that. And then we'll talk. So one of the things that I'd like to ask you is, tell us what you think is an absolute must that absolutely needs to go in to the Urantia Book for Dummies in order to explain a particular idea or paper or section, something that you feel needs to be in. We probably will get around to most of it, but it's good to know what it is that the other readers would like us to bring forward. So the thing that we want to try and explain is, you know, what's this all about and why are we doing this? And I can pretty much sum it up in one word. And the word is father. I'm a dad. And from the minute that I started reading the Urantia book and realized what this thing is, and that this really does answer many of the challenges that we face right now with positive optimism and truth and solutions that are beyond anything I'd ever heard. And I had some experience with that. About 2 months after the Urantia book landed in my lap by one of those 1970s sort of kind of things that your anti-book readers often talk about, kind of out of the unusual. I was invited to be a delegate to the United Nations conference called Habitat. It was part of a global seven-part conference that was part the United Nations seeking for solutions to our world problems. And as a delegate, we worked for months and months and months. Our particular resolution that we were looking for was to bring clean and pure water to every village in the world. And in working I came to realize even more of what some of our challenges and problems are. And that was back in 1976. They've since multiplied tremendously. And a few months later after that, another kind of out of the blue and invitation came to lead the Communities Forum for the World Symposium on Humanity, which was another seven global conference of seven cities around the world, all satellite linked. And again, you know, some of the really big problem solvers in our world were there, and we were working to try and figure out what's going on. And I had just received this big blue book, and I was just introducing some of the ideas that I had just read. And my God, the more I spoke about those ideas without ever mentioning your answer book, the further I got pushed to the front of the room kind of thing, and realized that, you know, there's ears out there to hear this. And this is really something important. And so a few months later, when I heard that there were other people reading this book someplace in the world, and that some of them were only 600 miles away and they were going to have an international conference, I went there. And I took my family and I took my children, because I wanted my children to know that there's a solution out there. There's an answer. And as they grew and grew themselves into a spiritual perspective, I was often trying to introduce the Urantia book to them. And mostly what I got was, right, Dad. You want me to read this big blue book. And... yeah, oh, sure, I will. My daughter actually did take a run at it and read through it. And when she was finished, she said, "Way too complicated. My spirituality is just simple." And I realized that if I wanted to introduce this more to my children, then I was going to have to bring it to them in a different way. And the Urantia Book for Dummies is that way. That has been my intention. I mean, we've been working on this for about 5 years. It came up when I had finished the Bible series, the Bible and the Urantia Book series for the Cosmic Citizen a couple of years back. It was a 2-year program. We ran it on Sundays. Some of you may have heard it. It was when that ended, and Paula and I were kicking around some ideas, and I said, you know, I wish that what we really had was something called the Urantia Book for Dummies. And she said, oh yeah, that would be so good. And I had known that there were many really, really great books. Marilyn's Story of Everything, and I had presented those to my children too, and they didn't get very far. And much of it was a great deal of it was around the theological language, some of it around the patriarchal masculine language, but mostly it was the idea that, just as the Urantia book, most of these secondary works that are just lovely, which I really love, always presented it from the top-down perspective, just as the Urantia book does. And I came across a phrase in the Urantia book. Let me see if I can find it again. Oh, yeah. It's in paper 19. And when I read this, I thought, hey, you know what? That might work. I'll read it. It says, "The human mind would ordinarily crave to approach the cosmic philosophy portrayed in these revelations by proceeding from the simple and the finite to the complex and the infinite. from human origins to divine destinies. But that path does not lead to spiritual wisdom. Such a procedure is the easiest path to a certain form of genetic knowledge, but at best, it can only reveal man's origin. It reveals little or nothing about his divine destiny. I thought, the easiest way is from the bottom-up approach. Now, it doesn't lead to spiritual wisdom, but I wasn't trying to teach my children spiritual wisdom, because I knew all along that spiritual wisdom comes from experience, and they have to go out and experience the world themselves in order to gain wisdom. What I just wanted to do was to present some of these ideas that would hopefully lead them to maybe a deeper looking into the Unite Your Papers. But even if I got a few ideas out to them, I would be happy. And so I started from the bottom-up approach. And as you view the videos and listen to some of these clips and things, that you'll see that that's what we're trying to do. The first thing that I thought I think I need to do is I have to start looking at this language, because I think it's a barrier. I think that it's a barrier to bringing some of the ideas and meanings and things forward from the Urantia book, because the age of theological language is disappearing, mostly in Western civilization, not so much in America. In America, you can still kind of get away with some God talk and still not get sort of hammered by other secularists, and et cetera, et cetera. But it isn't, in some of the places I worked, it just wasn't acceptable. And as soon as I changed using that language, it was much more receptive. It was received. I'm, as most of you probably already know, I'm an ordained Christian minister, and I've been in ministry for 25 years at the front of the church. And I dropped the Urantia book teachings into, I would say, every service I ever did. And at the beginning, never mentioned the Urantia book. And that church filled up. And so did the next church that I had. Every time I did, people were really, really hungry for these ideas. So we started off with just sort of plain English. That's kind of where we're going to go. And when we went at the appropriate point, we'll introduce what the theological language is and why the Urantia Papers came to us in this particular format. So we put this out, and my God, this thing has really taken off. I looked yesterday on our views, and we're over 60,000 views, and we've got nearly 1,000 people who have subscribed to the YouTube channel, and the comments underneath each of these videos just really seem to be positive and optimistic, and people like this, and it just seems to be really moving along. So that's my motivation for doing this. We're told that we need to understand origin, history, and destiny, and we've already introduced that into the Urantia Papers, or the Urantia Paper for Dummies. And I'll run another clip in a little bit while, and that'll explain what the whole idea of dummies and why we spell it slightly different than the IES. But the purpose of this, hopefully, is to bring this to the publisher of the For Dummies series, a book, a real book, hands-on book, called The Urantia Book for Dummies. The publisher who owns the copyright of that is called Wiley Publishing, and they don't accept manuscripts or anything from just regular writers or people. It has to come through an agent or a publisher. And we have publishers in the Urantia movement. We have publishers. We have Uversa Press. So what Paul and I were talking about was, how would we excite Wiley Publishing about doing this? Well, we introduced the idea that, first of all, the Urantia book is an international bestseller. It's been translated into 14 languages, and there's more on the way. It's global in its scope. And these videos, people are paying attention. People are looking at this. What will help us is for Urantia book readers to start helping us bring this series out into the world through putting it out into social media and helping us spread the word. Sharon Sadler has done a wonderful job of publicizing it and bringing these numbers along with the work that she's done. She's on our team, and she's just a real trooper, And Gary Tong has come forward, and he has just done a magnificent job of the whole last half of chapter two. If you go and look at these videos, just do it just for the video that Gary's put up there. It is phenomenal. It's so beautiful. And right now, Lisa Crowe is doing some excellent graphic work for us with this the hand that writes the quotes. It's just so good. It's been so well received, and we're having so much fun with it. So that's quickly, in a nutshell, what we are trying to do, hoping to do, trying to bring forward. And we're really grateful for this 3 weeks that we get to bring these ideas. This week, we want to talk a little bit, just as a way of an introduction of why and how we're doing it. And next week, we'll talk a little bit more about what we call the game, and why we think the Urantia book is trying to tell us that this journey through the universe is a game, and that we're all playing it, whether we recognize or understand it or not. And we've introduced it again on the information page. It comes from paper 110, section 3, that says, adjusters are playing the sacred and superb game of the ages. They are engaged in one of the supreme adventures of time and space. And how happy they are when your cooperation permits them to lend assistance to your short struggles of time as they continue to prosecute the larger task of eternity. So those are some of the ideas. Right now, I'll play you one of our theme songs. For those who are listening to this in earbuds, watch. Sometimes when on Blog Talk Radio particularly, I've noticed it, is that when one of the hosts unmutes and comes on, there's a big crack. So just make sure that nothing's going to come and bite your ears. Here we go. This is called Point of Light.
There is a point when you cannot walk away, when you have to stand up straight and tall and mean the words you say. There is a point you must decide just to do it cause it's right. That's when you become a point of light. There is a darkness that everyone must face. It wants to take what's good and fair and lay it all to waste. And that darkness covers everything in sight until it meets a single point of light. All it takes is a point of light, a ray of hope in the darkest night. If you see what's wrong and you try to make it right, you dedicated armies of quiet volunteers. reaching out to feed the hungry, reaching out to save the land, reaching out to help their fellow man. There are dreamers who are making dreams come true, taking time to teach the children there's nothing they can't do. Giving shelter to the homeless, giving hope to those without, isn't that what this land's all about? One by one, from the mountains to the sea, points of light are calling out to you and me. All it takes is a point of light, a ray of hope in the darkest night. If you see what's wrong and you try to make it right, you will be a point of light. If you see what's wrong and you try to make it right, you will be a point of light.
So once again, that was called Point of Light by Randy Travis, if you couldn't tell from his voice. These are just songs about volunteerism and the importance of how are we going to change this world. From my perspective, I believe that what's in the UNCHA papers are the solutions to what we need to do to take this civilization from where it is to where it needs to go. For those of you who have watched some of the series, you will notice in chapter 2, we started to lean towards the problems of civilization in crisis. And we started to draw and use Steve McIntosh's books on the purpose of evolution and how he's explained we also drew on the artwork called The Spiral of Evolutionary Development, where this particular image shows a spiral of evolution and how the human systems have developed from the family clan units as we crossed over from the treetop nurseries of our primal relatives who springboarded us into this human system, and immediately grew into the family clans, which for their own safety and protection, eventually over thousands and thousands and thousands of years of evolution, became the tribal system, the tribal consciousness that was fundamental to the advance of the human species, even though they ended up slaughtering each other. And through that, eventually into the traditional national territories and eventually into the nations. They're still slaughtering each other. And then from the development of that, we moved into the modern world or the modern consciousness through the Industrial Revolution and the development of the industrial mechanisms that came to fill the age of material comfort. And then in about the 60s, after these huge, terrible wars, things started to change. A consciousness seemed to change in and around the 60s, where so many of the Urantia book readers really, really discovered their own spirituality and that, you know, a lot of the modern world ideas really don't work and are not sustainable. And we grew into what is now being called, probably incorrectly, but being called postmodern consciousness. And that even right now, what we're witnessing is this battle between the modern ideas of progress and the postmodern ideas of progress, and it's showing up in any number of ideas and systems and ideologies that seem to be squabbling with each other all the time. And what the Urantia book warns us of, and which we're witnessing, is something that's called regression. Instead of progress, we're regressing back towards a tribalism. And that this is very challenging, because the further you go back, the longer it takes to go back forward. So we began this program called the Urantia Book for Dummies with the idea that, you know, there's something bigger happening than our squabbling. We're moving to a whole new civilization, a whole new way of doing everything. And certainly our tools have always led us forward. The agricultural age came out because of the discovery of the plow and the sickle. And that changed the world for all times. We moved from herders and hunters and into the agricultural age. And for thousands and thousands of years, that was the way of things were done on the planet, in different places on the planet. With the invention of the steam engine, we moved into the industrial age. But we hung on to the agricultural age. And this is where we use the idea of transcend but include. We transcended the agricultural age, but we included it because it's so fundamentally important. But now with the modern and industrial age, we need to, and are moving, into a whole new age. But we will still transcend the age that we live in, and we will include both the industrial age, because it's fundamental, and the agricultural age, because it's fundamental, and create a whole new way of seeing things. And in particular, one of our tools that is moving us forward is the computer age. I know something about that. I used to teach computer science in college. So I'm beginning to see that these ideas, these transitions, are the areas where there's the most difficulty. And so that's where we based our first, the chapter two of the Urantia Book for Dummies, was that civilization is in crisis. And when we look at it, without getting into a lot of detail, the story of civilization in crisis is out there, and we all see it, even though we approach it from our own different ideologies and different approaches, different opinions, conclusions, and that's just the way it is, and that's what we need to do. That's how we move forward. Is your answer papers tell us conflict is essential for animal species to move forward, and we're working it out. We're working out this next step into the next civilization. And I'm unabashed about the fact that I believe that the Urantia papers contain the civilization, the solutions to bringing forward the next civilization. I particularly, when that hit me, when I was reading in, I think it's paper 70, 71, 72, Development of Modern Civilization, after the experience I'd had with the United Nations and the World Symposium on Humanity, that, wow, this thing is telling us how we can modify this, how we can start to lead it in another direction. But as most of us who have read the papers know, and many of the teachers today are teaching, the Urantia book only gives us half of what we need in order to move our life and our society forward. The first half that it gives us is the text itself, and the ideas, the meanings and values that it presents within it, these amazing 196 papers. But the second part is my own willingness to internalize these ideas and use them in my everyday life and teach them to my children and do whatever I can to bring them forward. And that's what the Urantia Book for Dummies is. It's a method whereby we can apply these ideas to the circumstances of life through experiments, spiritual experiments, a series of experiments in practical spirituality. Sort of much along the lines that Henry David Thoreau wrote in his many writings and lectures about living deliberately and experimenting with ideas in the events and the circumstances that are in your life that keep coming at us like out of a shotgun for most of us. And that what the Urantia papers tell us is that we can tame these circumstances. We can manage them and modify them in order to create a life of joy and happiness and even prosperity and peace. And so that's partly where we're going. Next week, we're going to deal a little bit more with those solutions and with those ideas. And in the third one, we're going to bring it forward into what is our plan and some of the ideas that we have that we're kicking around. But they can't come from one person or one small team. What we're looking for is input and helpers and people who will get involved and who are interested in a particular subject and would like to write an essay or give us an audio or people who have some graphic skills would be wonderful. There's a lot of really wonderful teachers who are coming forward. And I'm of the opinion that this is the time. And I'm of the opinion that this is what's going to change the world. And this is, and I don't care who says, oh, he thinks he's going to change the world. Well, yeah. What's wrong with that is what I've been saying for 40 years since I've been reading this. We can do this, and the time is now. The time is to come forward. We're looking at a world where we have been kicking the can down the road for far too long. And all of these roads have converged into one giant junction, and there's a whole lot of cans of garbage that are sitting right there in that junction. And they can't go anywhere. You can't start kicking these things back down a road into tribalism and clan fighting and war and all the stuff that we've been doing. Something's got to be done. And who's going to do it but us? I mean, we hold in our hand half of the solution. The other half is internalizing and living it. And that's what I think we need to do. All right, now I'm going to play another song. All right, so actually this is another country and western. It's not that we're just leaning particularly towards country and western. I just like this song, so watch your ears.
Today I'm going to try to change the world. I'm going to take it one day at a time. I made my resolution. I've opened up my eyes. Today I'm going to try to change the world. I'm going to say hello to my neighbor. I'm going to greet him with a smile. Shake the hand of a stranger, sit and talk to him for a while. Gonna tell someone I love them from the bottom of my heart. Today I'm gonna try to change the world. Yeah, today I'm gonna try and change the world. Gonna take it one day at a time. I made my resolution. Opened up my eyes. Today I'm gonna try and change the world. I'm gonna make sure my children know right from wrong. Never turn my back on those who need someone. Always gonna try to see myself through another's eyes. Hey, I'm gonna try to change the world. Yeah. Lord, I try. Every day I'm gonna try to change the world. I'm gonna take it one day at a time. Yeah, I made my resolution. I will open up my eyes. The day I'm gonna try to change the world.
So that's my motivation for trying to bring these papers forward. I have never, ever read or studied or heard of anything, nothing in the seminary, nothing in the university, nothing anywhere that has made me think could answer the call to what it is that we need to bring forward and live both for ourselves and for a joyful society, a better world, a better world for our children and now for my grandchildren. It became sort of the motivating force for just about everything I've did. Once I retired from ministry, well, you never retire from ministry, but once I retired from the pulpit, I guess, I realized that this is the answer. And it reminds me that with this comes certain responsibilities. To those who much is given, much is required. And I always thought, I just don't want to show up on the other side of the dimensional membrane and be asked, so we gave you the revelation, what did you do with it? And say, I read it. Even I lived it. I shared it with others. I shared it with others as best I could. And the way that I've seen the way to do this is trying to make it a little bit simpler for others to read or to understand. And if nothing else, just bring these ideas forward. And I think that we all have a responsibility to do that. Once you find it in your own mind that this is what it claims to be, or at least it's worth investigating further, but these ideas should be brought forward so that people can understand what we're doing to each other, and that what we're doing in our world is absolutely right and proper, but it's a mess, and it's going to be a mess for a long time. But that's evolution. It's dirty. It's conflict after conflict after conflict. It's us bumping and banging our heads against each other in a marriage, in a family, in a community, in a nation, on a planet. And when you know something, you need to act. To know and not do is worse than not know. So when I got this, I knew I have to try and do something. And I'm reaching out to the community to say, come and help us. We've got a great group. It's slow. We don't get a chance to communicate much with each other because we got our heads down and we're doing stuff. Some in this direction, some in that direction, some in this direction. This revelation is a reservoir which thousands and thousands of streams will flow through and flow from. And one of the things that we even recognize in our own planet is that as streams and rivers become more and more polluted, we move our dams up further and further and further to the purer and cleaner water. And this reservoir of the Urantia Book is the purest and the cleanest that I've ever come across. And I'm in, and I just want to share that. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to run another clip. This one is not up yet. It is it's chapter 3. It's the beginning of chapter 3. Part of chapter 3 is up on the YouTube now. I think it's Cosmic Briefing number 13. This is going to be Cosmic Briefing number 10. Oh, yeah, I should probably explain. We put them up as they're done. This is just, we're all volunteers. but it costs a lot to do these things. And we would love to have a donation or two to buy software so it would make it easier and other things and promote it and advertise it. And you can do that out under your Ancient Book for Dummies site. But this is chapter 3, and this is the beginning of it. That's not up yet, but Lisa Crow has just finished doing the graphics for this part of it. And so we're going to run this right now. And then I'll come back. If I don't run out of time, I'll come back and we can talk some more.
This is the Urantia Book for Dummies, Chapter 3, The Unconscious Civilization, Section 1. Have you ever been told a joke that you didn't get? A skeleton walks into a bar, calls the bartender over, and says, "Give me a beer and a mop." Everyone in the room is killing themselves laughing, holding their sides, drinks running out of their nose. And you're just standing there with a puzzled look on your face, saying, "I don't get it." We've all done it. You might remember having that happen to you and how that felt, being in that awkward position. Usually, this is when someone steps up and tries to explain it to you. But as E.B. White's famous analogy points out, explaining a joke is like dissecting a frog. You might understand it better, but the frog dies in the process. Well, then eventually, with enough explaining, the light goes on. Bling! But the moment, it's kind of lost, and we feel slightly embarrassed. Or sometimes, what's even worse is when you're the only one in the room who does get it. You're the one holding your side, killing yourself laughing, while everyone else is standing around looking at you with the puzzled looks on their faces and saying, "I don't get it." Well, both of these experiences are very much like what the spiritual experience is. For hundreds of thousands of years, there have been those who get it and those who don't. And this has become part of the great debate that is causing such a great deal of conflict in our world today. Your ancient book tells us in paper 101, "To all of your fellows who have had a similar spiritual experience, no argument about the spiritual experience is necessary. While to all those who are not so sure of this, no possible argument could ever be truly convincing." Boy, ain't that the truth. While this is the main theme of this chapter 3, The Unconscious Civilization, in the Urantia Book for Dummies, Section 1. We want to talk about this. The Urantia Book defines spirituality as the augmentation of cosmic insight. Augmentation means is becoming greater, larger, more. Cosmic insight, they identify as the grasp of universe meanings. In paper 16, it goes on to tell us that our moral nature would be impotent without the art of measurement, the discrimination embodied in an ability to scrutinize meanings. It makes us different than the animals. Likewise, would moral choosing be futile without that cosmic insight which yields the consciousness of spiritual values, as we talked about back in chapter 2. So here, the Urantia Book is telling us that it is mind that gives us this ability to scrutinize meanings, and cosmic insight which yields the consciousness of spiritual values. Mind and spirit working together. Mind is a phenomenon connoting the present activity of energy systems. We are an energy system, and our mind is an energy system that's attached to this. And this is true on all levels of intelligence. We'll explain the mechanics of mind and the physics of spirit as we go along, even in this chapter. The Urantia Book goes on and says that in personality, mind ever intervenes between spirit and matter. We talked about this in chapter 2, Matter, Mind, and Spirit. It goes on, "Therefore is the universe illuminated by three kinds of light. One, physical or material light, like a light bulb or the sun at the center of our solar system. Two, there's intellectual insight, like getting a joke. And three, there's spiritual luminosity. This is the light part of the word enlightenment. There's this characteristic light, spiritual luminosity, that is known as the pilot light. Sometimes it's called the light of life. Sometimes referred to as the true light, which lights every child who comes into the world. We've heard these before. Now, this begs the question, then, from chapter 2. Is this darkness, which seems to be overtaking our world, our planet, is this darkness the darkness of the tomb or the darkness of the womb? Well, if it's the darkness of the womb, then we need a womb with a view, because this depends on our world view. Whether your worldview is bottom up or whether your worldview is top down. From what often is a cliche saying, meaning 30,000 miles up. Much like the traffic report on television news in the early morning, the view from above shows all the little red and white snakes weaving their way through the main streets of the city, showing all the trouble spots, the accidents, the gridlock along the way. This is the top down view. But to the person in the middle of the traffic jam, sitting in their car wondering what's going on, all they can see is the immediate problems right straight in front of them that's causing them all this trouble, going to make them late for work. This is the bottom-up view. Now, using another analogy, we'll try to understand the cosmic perspective using top-down, bottom-up. Suppose you won a contest to be the very first human being ever to look through the world's most powerful telescope ever built. This telescope is so powerful that it can look right into the center of the universe. Now imagine that you put your eye up to the telescope's eyepiece, you focus your image on that very center of the universe, and what do you see? What you see is another even bigger telescope with an even bigger eye looking right back at you. Well, us, really. Well, that is what these 196 papers called the Urantia Papers, the Urantia Book, tell us the Urantia Book is. A collection of papers all written by experts in their fields and telling us what our world looks like from 30,000 miles up. The Urantia Book, in many ways, is this telescope looking back at us. The Urantia Book itself gives us a top-down perspective of how our planet, our societies, and ourselves have evolved to this point, and what the solutions are to the problems that we face here in this step, this next step in the spiral of evolutionary development. Many who have read these papers have said that this book feels like the cosmic Rosetta Stone, unlocking connections and routes to a panoply of different ideas and concepts, meanings, and values, giving us a full set of tools to assist us in taking evolution to the next step through the decisions and the choices that we make today that will determine our future. What the Urantia Book tells us first is that in order to understand this, we need an interpretive framework, a bigger, better idea of how we got into this situation, where we are at in the evolution of our species, and provides us with a better decision-making mechanism with which to make better choices and decisions if we are to move this civilization and our own lives forward in this new world that is emerging that most of us don't even understand. We need a better decision-making mechanism. And Alfred North Whitehead, one of the great mathematicians, philosophers, great minds of the 20th century, surely hits the nail on the head when he declares this in this statement. He writes, in each stage or epoch of the world where there is a surging forward into a new society, like now, there will be found some profound cosmological worldview implicitly accepted, pressing its own flavor on the current springs of action. Now, we often refer to this as a paradigm shift, this profound cosmological worldview. And it is the interpretive framework in whatever age it influences, whether it be the clan societies, the tribal configurations, the agricultural age, the industrial age, or the modern worldview. We've all had our own cosmological worldview about how the world works, our place in the universe. And has always been the view of the universe and reality that inspires a whole new interpretation of purpose, a kind of internal energy that emerges and sets fire to the mind and the spirit, the human adventure, right? Filling the sails of society with a new energy and propelling the ship of civilization ahead at a breakneck speed into the next level of social evolution, from clans to tribes to traditional world to the modern world. This interpretive framework that we use. We saw this when Christopher Columbus stumbled into the New World, and the world became round instead of flat. A paradigm shift, an interpretive framework. And what the Urantia book is telling us is we need a new one. The Urantia Book for Dummies, on the other hand, is a bottom-up investigation of these papers and these suggested solutions from our perspective as we look at these situations that we face in this critical moment in history from the bottom up, like the guy stuck in the traffic jam who's completely in the dark and wondering what the problem is up ahead. Why aren't we moving? Why aren't we moving forward? And how this is going to affect his life. Now, often, when we think of the word dummy, we might think of, maybe the crash test dummy we use to make our technology safe. Or we may even think of a person whose intellectual light is a bit dim. But that is not how we are using the word dummies here in these presentations. Here, we are using the word as an acronym formed from the initial letters DMMYS. What we need now is a better decision-making mechanism to make those choices and decisions that will move us from an age of destruction to a higher age of construction, building a world that works both for the individual as well as our society, our world, our planet. And we begin with the individual. The Urantia Book tells us in paper 145, do you not realize that the hope for a better nation or a better world is bound up in the progress and enlightenment of the individual? We each individually need a decision-making mechanism for ourselves. Hence the word dummies. The Urantia Book tells us that the thing is, we already have one. It's built right into the mind energy system within each one of us, like an app. But it didn't come with a how-to operator's manual. And our trial and error experimental use of it has led us into some very difficult situations, both individually as well as globally. As we maneuver through this labyrinth of evolution on our individual tightropes. And this is what the Urantia Book is, a new operator's handbook for this new age of our civilizational evolution and the decision-making mechanisms that are going to be needed in order to move our civilization from where we are to where we need to be. The Urantia Book tells us that there is always a right and proper way through any problem, conflict, or challenge. In the face of any alternative, there's a perfect solution, a right and proper way through anything that comes up, any problem that we face. And all we need to do is to learn to play the game of life as we live it, day by day, moving through this, the human experience. In this investigation, we have taken many ideas, ideals, meanings, and values suggested in the Urantia book, and we plug these into our futuring tools for monitoring these trends into this new era, this new world, this new age that is already breaking through out of the darkness and into the light of a new day over our planet. But it's sad to record that so few persons take delight in playing this game by cultivating these qualities of courageous and independent thinking. And so here in the Urantia Book for Dummies, the decision-making mechanism for yourself, we're going to practice playing this game, understanding these ideas, these ideals, bringing these meanings and these values into our life by playing the game of life from the suggested ideas in the Urantia Book of building a serviceable scaffolding with which to frame the ideas presented in the book, as in paper 115. It reads, "Partial, incomplete, and evolving intellects would be helpless in the master universe, would be unable to form the first rational thought pattern, were it not for the innate ability of all mind, high or low, to form a universal frame in which to think. If mind cannot fathom conclusions, if it cannot penetrate to true origins, then will such mind unfailingly postulate conclusions and invent origins that it may have a means of logical thought within the frame of these mind-created postulates. And while such universe frames for creature thought are indispensable to rational intellectual operations, they are, without exception, erroneous to a greater or lesser degree. Conceptual frames of the universe are only relatively true. They are serviceable scaffolding which must eventually give way before the expansions of enlarging cosmic comprehension. The understandings of truth, beauty, goodness, morality, ethics, duty, love, divinity, origin, existence, our purpose, destiny, time, space, are only relatively true." So this is where game theory comes in. In paper 110, we read this: "Adjusters are playing the sacred and superb game of the ages. They are engaged in one of the supreme adventures of time and space." They're telling us that there's a game afoot and that we are a part of it. When we use game theory as a conceptual frame with which to frame the picture of what the Urantia Book is telling us, we have an excellent serviceable scaffolding with which we can logically present the ideas, ideals, meanings, and values contained in the Urantia papers. Game theory, which is used by most economists, scientists, philosophers, etc., is a powerful educational tool used in most colleges and universities. The Urantia Book is inferring that our life and our whole journey through the universe is a heuristic educational game. Not heuristic, heuristic. Heuristic means to be found or discovered for oneself. A heuristic method is an approach most of us use all the time. These are the rules of thumb, our educated guesses, intuitive hunches, judgments, or simply common sense that we use in a general way to solve problems. This enables us to discover or learn something for ourselves through a hands-on learning or learn-by-doing approach. And that's what heuristic means. It's the interactive approach to learning through experience, by working to the solution of a problem by trial and error, what is sometimes called by the seat of our pants. Through this method of exploratory problem-solving, we develop techniques of self-education that we use to improve our performance or our results in life, and thereby grow and improve our life. learn by experience, is what the Urantia Papers are telling us, and that we are on a journey from here to eternity through this game environment in which we experience the fullness and the richness of life as it exists and as we participate fully and completely in it. So we invite you to join us in the next segment as we begin to present the ideas of this game. We begin to talk about futuring and the tools of the science of futuring, as the Urantia Papers are very interested in our future. So we invite you to join us in our next segment and come and play UB the game and test your decision-making mechanism for yourself and see if there isn't some way to strengthen, upgrade, upload a new one, and see the results of your life beginning to improve. If you are watching this on YouTube, click the subscribe button and we'll notify you when the next episode is up. If you're watching this on some other of your favorite media, then follow this address here to our YouTube channel, click on subscribe, or go to this address, UrantiaBookForDummies.org, and get on our mailing list and we'll let you know when the next notification is up. So, let there be peace. Okay, so we got a few more minutes on the program, and we just want to talk a little bit about that. One of the questions that comes up is game theory. You're turning the Urantia book into a game? Yeah, exactly. As I said earlier, the Urantia book gives us half of what we need. The text, the information, the meanings, the values, the ideas. But internalizing them is really hard. It's a hard thing to do. How do you do that? Well, what game theory does is we all love games. We all play games and we work hard to win games. Look at kids on the video games now. Well, the Urantia Papers are telling us that it's a lot like that. This has been field tested. I did this when I was teaching computer science to business students in college. And on the very first day, I walked in and said, I'm not going to grade you, I'm going to pay you. Now, when you tell that to a classroom of 30 highly caffeinated, who's highly blood sugar, high levels of blood sugar, to a group of business students who are worried about their students' death, you really get their attention. And for 2 years, we played class as a game. I was the customer, and they were the programmers programming my needs, and I paid them. And I never told my dean, and it got me into some trouble until the fact that the classroom was never empty. The attendance was higher than before, and the grades were higher than before. And everybody loved what they were doing. They were meeting. We were forming teams, and they were meeting in coffee shops after the hours. It was really great. And that really worked well. And so I've done that in a number of different experiences. Won't go into now. But when I started to read the Urantia Papers, I could see, you know what? Game theory has been used in so many areas to solve problems. We have things called war games. When I was in business college, we played what was called the MBA games, where we took our business plans and our pro formas and all our financials, and we brought them into a computer, and then we played the game to other teams in college. And everybody was crazy to go and play those games. When we take the Urantia book and its ideas and we tweak that a bit, we can recognize that is a scaffolding or a worldview or a particular frame of reference that is really fun, but it's really hard. I'll tell you what I did in the first thing. Try this for yourself. On the very first day, I asked the students to think about thinking positive. What does it take to think positive? We've all heard how important it is and how powerful it is and how good it is to have a positive, optimistic view. And so I put them on a diet
a 21-day diet, and I said, try being positive for everything that shows up in your life for the next 21 days. We talked about then the idea that when something comes up and you start thinking about it in a negative way, imagine that it's a coin and you just flip it and it comes up positive. What's the positive? What's the positive of this solution that I'm facing right now? And boy, the results of that were amazing. The first thing we find out usually is how negative we are, how negative others are, and how really, really hard this is. But I invite you to try it just for the next week and join us in the next program, because the spiritual dimension and being spiritual is even harder. And anybody who's read the Urantia papers knows that. This is not an easy challenge. But when you frame it as a game, my God, it's a lot of fun. My God, it's a lot of fun. I'm going to sign off. I'll see you next week. Come and join us. Let there be peace on earth. Let it begin with me. Watch your ears.